Chovis Alvodis from, of course, Rabbeinu Bechaye. The first week, I believe, maybe the second week, when we started Chovis Alvodis, discussing a little bit about the personality of the Chovis Alvodis, I believe it was mentioned that it's just a very fascinating thing that the whole personality of the Chovis Alvodis is clouded in mystery, very, very much. And the truth is, we don't know the yichus of his family, not known. We don't know about any of his children or any of his relatives. We don't know who his rebbes were. We don't really know who his talmidim were. And then so on and so forth. There is a lot of things which is really interesting if we sit back and we see that how the Sefer, on the one hand, Chovis Alvodis, is something that was niskabel, which was accepted and received by all factions, you know, in the Jewish community, starting going back so many hundreds and hundreds of years back. But yet, as far as the personality of the Mechaber, of the Sefer, is something that we don't know. And there are many who actually drew on the example similar to the, of course, the sun which provides, of course, so much light to the entire world. And yet, as far as the sun itself is concerned, it is really also something which is, the Pasuk tells us, the sun is HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed the sun ben artiko. It has its receptacle. In other words, if the sun would be taken out of its receptacle with full force, it would be so hot it would be impossible really to sustain it. We find a little bit of a glimpse of that by Avraham Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to prevent people from coming by and causing Avraham Avinu to overexert himself after the third day of his milah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu hoitzi chama min artiko, which means that the sun, under its normal situation, it's clouded and it's basically hidden in its holder, in its receptacle. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, it says, B'chol ho'olam yotzo kavom u'miktzei sevel mileyem, la'shemesh som oil bohem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put an oil, as it were, as if the sun is in a tent. The sun itself is a very, very mysterious creation, and yet, of course, provides life and sustenance and all the light to the world. And as Rashi says over there, which wherever you go, everybody praises, talks about the sun. I mean, when the sun comes out and it's so bright and it's so nice. And Rashi's Loshen Izzi says, Shahakril Mishabchim Bifiyem Esmaase Bereshis, because the Oyer Hashemish, he says, Mechaya Umeir Kol Oilam, because the light of the sun gives light, illuminates the entire world. And yet the sun itself, Som Oil Behem, the Pasuk says, it is something which is, it is hidden away, it is stashed away in its, and it's marked in a specific place. And so too the Chovis Alvodis itself, they say, similar to the sun. It provides a lot of light, a lot of Ashkofa, a lot of Musar, a lot of teaching, a lot of Teichocha. And yet we don't know too much about him. The Pearson, of course, the notoriety of the Chovis Alvodis, there's Ein Shir. It goes very, very far. And it's interesting even to point out that the Chovis Alvodis, which originally was written, you know, because in Arabic, that's what he wrote. He wrote in Arabic, but with Hebrew letters. And the reason he writes himself is because he wanted that the Sefer should be able to reach as many people as possible. And at that time, that was the common language. Common language spoken, they spoke in Arabic. So it was in Hebrew and translated. It was written in Arabic and translated into Hebrew. But again, even that, there was a time that some that made a mistake in thinking that the translation later from the Arabic into Hebrew was done by himself, was done by the Chovis Alvodis, which is not true. It's again, it's another part of some of the things of the mystery of the Chovis Alvodis, which people were not even aware of at the time. For example, the Sefer Seder Hadoiris. The Sefer Seder points out that there was a Yesh Oimrim, that Rabbeinu who hetik ha-Sefer, he says, that he was the one really who was matik the Sefer and so on and so forth. He was the one who translated it. Also, by the way, the Sefer Chovis Alvodis, it's not an exact translation of how he wrote it in Arabic with the Hebrew letters. I don't know Arabic. But the Mevinim say that it was called Sefer Toiras Chovis Alvodis, the teaching of the duties of the heart. And subsequently, as it has been shortened and called the Sefer Chovis Alvodis, but for an accurate, a more accurate translation of the way he wrote it on the title page of his Sefer, it was called Teiras Chovis Alvodis. But again, this is again all part of the Chovas Halvavos that we are talking about. Interesting thing is that the Chovas Halvavos also was Choshish. He was sort of concerned. He was concerned that people, you know, might somehow take the credit for writing the Sefer on their own. So interesting, for some reason, why he did not write the name, his name. The name is not written on the title page at all in the original manuscript. But rather, at the end of the Sefer, the end of Chovas Halvavos, he wrote a poem. And he wrote a poem, and the poem basically consists of bringing together the 10 gates, the 10 Shorim. Chovas Halvavos, as we said, is 10 gates. It's like, for example, we're learning Shar HaBitochin, and there's 10 of them, gates of different areas in Hashkofe. And he brings down, makes a poem which combines all of the 10 gates, and in that poem, you have an acrostic, Bechaye, which his name is, of course, Rabino Bechaye, as he's known by. That's why at the end of the Sefer, he really put it down. He said, V'chasamti behem sifri liyas l'chol maskeres. He says, it was chosen. And he points out that, so the shir, the poem, the song that he wrote at the end of the Sefer, really, and by the way, that was written in Lashon Kodesh. That was written in Hebrew. Although the Sefer itself, as we said, was written in Arabic, but the shir that he wrote, which he concluded the Sefer, the poem, was really written in Lashon Kodesh, and in order to it should spell out the name, which is, of course, his name was Rabbeinu Bechaye. So it is just interesting is that there are also other Rishonim that we don't know too much about their life. For example, which is Sefer, which is quoted very, very often, quoted by the Taz and by the great Poskim, the Sefer HaKolboy. Kolboy was a Rishon. We don't know much about him at all. Sefer Kolboy. It's universally accepted as an authoritative Sefer Halacha, going back many, many hundreds of years ago. Also, there's Sefer Orchis Chaim Melunil. Sefer Orchis Chaim. Also, from a Rishon. Not very clear exactly who the Machaber was, but we might go even more than that. Very, very popular Sefer. Well, everybody knows Minchas Chinuch, but Minchas Chinuch is a Sefer, a Pirish on the Chinuch. The Chinuch was the Rishon who wrote the Sefer explaining rationale of the Mitzvah HaTorah, Sefer HaChinuch, and he, their klal, as far as enumerating all the Tariq Mitzvahs, he follows the Shittas HaRambam, the Chinuch, but it's not clear who the Mechaber of the Chinuch was. It is accepted by many, many. It is Rabbeinu Aaron Halevi, the Ro, Reish Aleph Hei, which is a Rishon, which is a Bratan, you know, by many Rishonim just throughout Shas, that the Ritva brings down, the Talmud of the Ro. And so, but it's not conclusive. There's still, this is being debated. There are others who disagree with that. And although this is commonly accepted that the Mechaber, the Chinuch, was the Ro. But again, so this is what we find. It's just interesting to point out that the Chidor writes in Sefer Shem HaGdoilim, writes the Chidor, that a Mechaber should in fact be makpid to write his name, he says, on the title page. So writes the Chidor in Sefer Shem HaGdoilim, and he says also because there is a cheshash that others might otherwise, they may take those chidushim and put them under their own name and so on. So a person should be makpid to write the name and so on. And he writes, from the time of the Goyim and on, from the time of the Goyim and on, he says, L'matzino misha noach shloi lichtev shemoi. Interesting. They all wrote their name. But yet, as we found, not all. And the Chovas Halvavos, as we said, didn't write in the beginning, but he was Meramez, at least he was Meramez somewhere at the end, as we say, name, which was Rabbeinu Bechaye Bar Yosef. His father's name was Bar Yosef. Let's just mention just one more thing, that he is quoted in other Rishonim. The Chovas Halvavos is quoted in other Rishonim as either Rabbeinu Bechaye Ben Pekuda with a pay, or Bekuda with a beis, right? And the interesting thing is, what's the other Rabbeinu Bechaye? As we mentioned, Rabbeinu Bechaye LaTorah. Rabbeinu Bechaye LaTorah should not be confused with the Chovas Halvavos, whose name was also Rabbeinu Bechaye. Rabbeinu Bechaye LaTorah was a few generations after him. Rabbeinu Bechaye LaTorah was a few generations after him, and he brings down the Chovas Halvavos himself, as we find in the Psich of Parshas Miketz, for example. In the Psich of Parshas Miketz, which was grounded last week's Parsha, so in the opening introduction to Parshas Miketz, so Rabbeinu Bechaye LaTorah, he writes that Kosav Harav HaGodol HaChosid Rabbi Bechaye Ben Pekuda Zal B'Sefer Chovas Halvavos Shechiber. So there's others want to be medayik in the words that he says Shechiber, the Sefer Chovas Halvavos that he authored, because Lafuke, the opinions of some who had doubts as to the exact author who really was Mechaber, the Chovis Avovis. So Kuponim, so Rabbeinu Bechai, but that was Rabbeinu Bechai ben Osher. Rabbeinu Bechai Latoy is Rabbeinu Bechai ben Osher. Pekuda was considered to be the family name. That was the name. That was the name Bekuda. And as far as the, as we mentioned, as far as the correct pronunciation, there is no real one correct pronunciation. If it's Rabbeinu Bechai, it's Rabbeinu Bachya. As Kedai just to mention that in Eidus HaMizrach, in the Sfarish community, those that belong to the Eidus HaMizrach, they would pronounce it Rabbeinu Bachya, and that's very interesting. And in the Ashkenazish community. Not many are aware that the two communities, in the Ashkenazi community, we usually pronounce Rabbeinu Bechaye, or Rabbeinu Bechaye, like Bechayechoin, Bechaye, Rabbeinu Bechaye, and so on and so forth. But be as it may, because that was his name, and as quoted in Rishonim, he also, by the way, the Rabbeinu Bechaye Latoyer wrote another sefer. And we happen to quote it in one of the Shurim, the Shabbos Shurim, the first Shabbos of Chanukah, actually, in the Chumash in the morning, is a Sefer Kara Kemach from Rabbeinu Bechaye. And so he brings down, the Rabbeinu Bechaye, La Toyer, brings down, as we say, the Chovis Avovis, as we just mentioned, Parshas Miketz. And he says also, Ubesifroi Kad HaKemach, also the Sefer Kad HaKemach from the same Rabbeinu Bechaye, the Chovis Avovis. He says, he quotes him in the Shar of Yichud Hashem and so on. Also he quotes him from Areches HaParnose. And he writes, Vikosa Bozeh HaChochem HaGodol, Rabbi Bechaye, he says, Ben Pekuda, B'Sefer Chovis Avovis Shechiber, and so on and so forth. Also, there's Sefer Yoshel Rabbeinu Tam, which, by the way, is also clouded in mystery. We say Sefer Yoshel Rabbeinu Tam because that is the most commonly accepted who the Mechaber of the Sefer Yoshel was, so it's Miyuchas Rabbeinu Tam, but there were others that say no. That, as a matter of fact, goes as far to say that this Sefer HaYosher was the Mechaber Rabbeinu Yoyne. So Rabbeinu Yoyne, who we learned Shari Tshuva and so on, and quoted many, many times in different areas. So this, again, is something which is not clear, but it's most commonly accepted Sefer Yosher Rabbeinu Tam, and the Sefer Yosher Rabbeinu Tam, in fact, in the Hagdoma writes, Kegoin Sefer Chovis Alvovois, Lechosid Rabbi Bechaye Ben Pekuda, he writes, and so on and so forth. So it's just very interesting to see how a Sefer that was accepted all over, called Tutsis Yisrael, all over, and yet we say the personality is clouded in mystery. And Bez Hashem, in the following weeks as we go by in Shurim, we'll try to decipher a little bit more to see that which was sort of uncovered, and the scholars have tried to unearth here bits and pieces to find out a little bit more about the Mechaber of the Sefer Chovis Avovis. But clearly it was Sefer that was Mugdish in the all area, B'chol Tvutzis Yisrael, a Sefer which stands in the front row of every Jewish community as being the Choshev Sefer that in fact that it is. Let me just mention, we are learning of course Shaar Bitochen, and as such, let me just bring out a very interesting incident. And I heard this from a family member of the person that I'm going to mention. Heard it from a family member, actually, it was said in a particular Drosha Barabin. It was said in Lakewood, as a matter of fact, a number of years ago, actually by a son of the Mechaber, or who I'm going to mention. And the Nekuda is that a person should never, when we talk about Shaar Bitochen, which the Chovis Avovis always makes the point, and we spoke about it last week as well, that we should not allow ourselves to erroneously try to attribute causes and effect the way we see them. We see causes which are followed by effects, and we always fall into the trap of defining situations by the way we see it. This was the cause and this was the effect, without understanding that maybe sometimes it's the opposite. It's because of the effect HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the cause happen, because we needed an effect. It's not because there was a cause, that's why we have an effect, but because we needed the effect, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the cause. So it's the effect, matter of fact, that brought the cause, not the cause that brought the effect. Which brings us to believe also, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that everything that happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu preordains it, and no action of any kind should be underestimated to be insignificant, because we never know how far reaching something that at the time we have limited vision, and therefore when we do something at the time it appears to be something very insignificant, doesn't have much importance, and yet you can never be sure. You do something right, that the effects of that action that you have done may have tremendous, tremendous, great consequences, also sometimes negative consequences. depending what type of an act it was. But one should not automatically evaluate and assess something to be insignificant. An illustration of that is as follows. In Miami Beach, Florida, there is a sort of a large shul. The shul, well-known shul, the Rav used to be there, he's not alive anymore, was Mordechai Shapiro. A number of years ago, actually now it's coming up, the Sora Batavis. Remember that there happened to be in Miami Beach, Florida, a matzav, sort of, let's use it in a moderate way, tachlui yelodim, many children disproportionately became sick, became ill. Jewish community who is serious does not attribute anything to a mikre, just to be happenstance, and therefore the Rabbonim decided to make a kinnis tshuva. I was invited then by Rabbi Chaim Feuer, who is living at the time in Miami Beach, who later moved to Muncie, New York, and now he's in Eretz Yisrael. He moved from there again, and he's a Rav in a shul there. It was a Sar Batavis, which is a fast day, and the Kinnis Shuva was in the shul of Rabbi Mordechai Shapiro. So that was the shul. So Rabbi Mordechai was. So I'm talking now. He was a Talmud of Lakewood in the early days, very early days, Rabbi Mordechai Shapiro. I'm talking about in the year of 1951. 1951, he says he was walking in Tel Aviv, Rav Mordechai Shapiro, on Allenby Street, he says, and he saw a very choshev looking yid. By the way, this might seem, many people heard about it, but if you didn't hear about it, it's a very, very fascinating thing. And it's kedai to even chazer over to remember what happened over here. He was walking in Tel Aviv, and he saw a very choshev looking yid, matter of fact, sort of like a saintly looking person, and he was selling small items in a little store. That was his pranosa. Saintly looking man selling small items in a store. And Rabbi Shapiro, he says, he observed the customers that were coming to purchase items, and yet he saw that the proprietor of the store, this choshev looking yid, never took his eyes out of the Mishnayis. He said, it's small Mishnayis, he was learning the Mishnayis. And this is what it was. He was selling, but he made the Mishnayis all the time. His eyes were focusing on Mishnayis while he was doing the business that he was doing. You can imagine, you can grace a business at the Mishnayis Gemach. So this was a small store, as it was. And it says, then he noticed that a young man comes over to the store and wanted to buy a pack of cigarettes. And it was Friday, Erev Shabbos. So the elderly person, the owner, the Choshevit, let's call him, he asked, what time is it? And the customer replied, he says, he looked at his watch, it was 12:15. It was 12:15 Erev Shabbos, so the shopkeeper said, well, if it's already after Chatzos, he says, said, I do not sell cigarettes after Chatzos because I don't want to contribute to Chilul Shabbos. I stung somebody pack of cigarettes. So, apparently it was a non-firm gentleman, and he already was concerned already from Friday Erev Shabbos. He says, I cannot sell you, he says, pack of cigarettes, I don't want to, he says, be responsible and contribute to Chilul Shabbos. So he refused to sell the cigarettes. And in other words, his love that he had for Shabbos was more important to him, of course, than the need for some money, some extra money. And Rabbi Shapiro saw this, and there was something very special about this person, and it caught his attention. And he wanted to know where this person come from and what was his story. So he approaches the old man and he inquired. And he finds out that before coming to Eretz Yisrael, this person, the shopkeeper, learning Mishnayos in the store, that in fact that he was a butcher in Minsk. He was a butcher in Minsk before the war, in Poland. So the store owner started to inquire about Rabbi Shapiro at that time, 1951, he's a young American bocher. So he wanted to inquire about him, and he asked him, he says, what's your name? Mordechai. So he says, Mordechai, says, where do you learn? Who's your Rosh Yeshiva? So he says, I learned Lakewood, New Jersey. He says, my Rosh Yeshiva, he says, Rav Aaron Kotler. As he was the founder of Rav Aaron. He got very animated and all of a sudden became very, very excited. And he says, do you know what happened? He says, to Arkele, he says, Sislitzer. Rav Aaron had a nickname way back in Europe, Arkele, affectionately. Arkele Sislitzer. So he says to him, do you know what happened to Arkele Sislitzer? Rabbi Shapiro himself was very shocked to this casual reference. He says, Rabbi Aaron, he never knew that Rabbi Aaron was called Arkele Sislitzer. Nobody in Lakewood called him that. He says, what is this nickname? Why are you calling by his nickname? He has a name, Aaron. His name is Aaron Kotler. Why are you calling this? And it's something, of course, that had to be a name that long by, that has not been in use anymore. So he was very curious to find out, where do you know this Archelaus sister? So where do you know him from? So he questioned him, he says to him, you want to know what happened to Arla Sislitzer? He says, you know who Rabbi Aaron Kotler is? He says to him, he says, Rabbi Aaron Kotler is the man, he says, who transplanted Torah in America after the destruction of European Jewry. And he's probably the greatest Marbitz Torah, he says, on these shores. He really built Torah here in America, the way it was in Europe. The old man hears this and he says, Baruch Hashem, he says, Baruch Hashem, he says, I accomplished something. What happened? He says, you see, he says to him that I had a minhug when I was a butcher, he says, back in Minsk. So I would put together a few zlotys, which is the Polish money, put together a few zlotys every week and store it in the jar. And he says, I would bring the coins, he said, to the local cheder, and I would ask the mishgiach to help me find some poor students. So I used the money that I collected, the extra money that I was able to spare, to be mechazik some poor talmidim. So he goes to the mishgiach and says, help me find some poor students, I could help. Mishgiach told me, he had two very poor boys that possessed unbelievable potential. They needed money to go to the yeshiva in Slobodka. And they have no money, they have nobody to worry about them, and who's able to do anything for them. So he says, I remember, says this shopkeeper, that one of those boys was known as Arkila, he says, Sislitzer. He says, I don't remember the name of the other one. So Rabbi Shapiro says, he said, my jaw dropped, he says, when I heard this. Could it be, they says, that a simple butcher had the schus to change the world? He sent Rabban to Slobodka. His few zlotys, they put together. Could it be that this simple butcher, he says, changed the world? Could it be that he had a major hand in the destiny of Klal Yisrael by assisting Ravarn, learning Slobodka, and thereby enabling him to become a Godel Hador? Years later, as we said, Rabbi Shapiro became Rav in Miami. Right, Rav in Miami, he meets Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, who was a contemporary, of course, of Rabarn. And Rabbi Shapiro told Rabbi Yankov the story that he had with the shopkeeper in Tel Aviv and his connection to Rabarn Kotler. And he asked Rabbi Yankov, could such a story be true? Could a simple butcher's small action make such a huge difference? Rabbi Yankov answered, it's a true story. I know that it's true because I was the other one. This Rabbi Yisai. No, this is how Kosh Baruch Hu fears the world. Here you have cause and effect. No, Bashem had his plans. Rabban had to be a godel no matter what. Rabbi Yankov had to be a godel. Bashem had ways. It came from the money of the butcher. But who could have imagined? Who could have imagined, he says, that a simple act like that could produce, of course, such greatness. And of course, this is just significant for all of us in everything that we do. Never to underestimate the chashivas of what we do. And to really understand that the tremendous far-reaching effects. And that's what the Chofetz Chaim always tells us in Shaar HaBitochim. To realize not to confuse cause with effect, and to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu preordained situations, then He'll make it happen one way or another. And if we have the schus to be a shlich in that, that's a tremendous Siyata Dishmaya that we should always hope for. So Rabbi Yisrael, let's go to the sheet now, before we start a few lines of Chofetz Chaim. And this is again from what we've been doing the last few weeks from the Beis Halevi, from the Sefer HaBitochin from the Beis Halevi, which again gives us insights of really of what Bitochin means and different levels of Bitochin. Bitochin Sen has many, many different madrigas, higher levels of Bitochin, lower levels of Bitochin. But we have to start somewhere, of course. And we have to also understand what our goals should be. Maybe one day to come as closely as possible to what the areas of Bitochin are. Just interesting thing is that, let me just tell you that the Briskerov, as we always make Shishik Lagdoma when we talk about the Beis Halevi here, the Briskerov told Rav Shach that it's Yedua that the Beis Halevi, as you know, his first marriage did not work out. There's a whole Maisa with that too, which is not the place to get into here. And the Ziv Grish did not work out, and therefore he had the need to find a Shidduch for Zivik Sheni for the second time around. When the first Shidduch broke up, and he was single, the Beis Halevi, the father of Reb Chaim, so he goes to Volozhin, which was his great uncle's yeshiva, because according to Itzel of Volozhiner, was the great uncle of the Beis Halevi, of Brisk. And Reb Itzel tried to help him, he says, to find a Zivik. And he tried to be Mishadachim with great Yichus, Beis Halevi, being an Odom Godel, he's very renowned at that time, as an Odom Godel all over.
So for, shidduch for the Beis Halevi, nothing less than a shidduch of great yichus, the daughter of some chosher rabbonim. And the Rebitzel of Elojner tried as much as as possible to try to find a pesayichizdig shidduch, that is a shidduch that would pass for such an olden god like the Beis Halevi. So they tried and they proposed a shidduch here, this type of shidduchim. He was in a tremendous ilui, and they needed someone to be able to support him, that the Beis Halevi should continue to grow in his learning even more and more, and so on and so forth. It happens that without the side Shatchonim and Rebitzele who tried, someone came in through the back door, so to speak, and he was Matziah, proposed a shidduch to Yoshe Be'er, his daughter, a very posh person. Who was he? He was a baker. A baker. He proposed that his daughter for a shidduch, and at the time she was very, very young. She was something like 13 years of age. Very, very young. In those days it was common to marry very young. And the Beis Halevi, being that, you know, the Gemara says, "Osa lovim she kadesh so isha ad she reno." It's a chazal, no matter how firm you want to be, but it's a chazal to say it's also right to become engaged and to get married to a woman. At least you have to see her first. So the idea was they brought him, the Beis Halevi, to the house where she was, and she was there in the kitchen. She happened to be making a dough and cutting it into thin pieces, you know, making lokshin. That's the way in the Haim of the Gemach Lokshin Alain, you know. So you made a dough and you had to cut it into strips of the Gemach Lokshin. And the Beis Halevi there was watching, and he said, "Ziza balbusta," he said. He says, "It's a shidduch for me." It's just an amazing thing, you know. They tried Rabbonim, they tried all kinds of things. Beis Halevi was not interested in that. And Shemaim had this cheshvan, and he got married to her, the daughter of a simple baker. And they were worried, what would a bit of a lojner think? He was always trying to find the Gresta Rabbonim, Yichud the Geshidah for the Beis Halevi, his great nephew, grand nephew. You know, what he can do with that? They told the Bitzel of Elojner that his great nephew got married, or is getting married, he says, to the daughter of a baker. So he said, "Mazel tov, Rabbeinu Shloilam, you won," he said. I'm not sure exactly what he meant, but it seemed that the Rebitzel had tried to arrange things his way, and Rabbeinu Shloilam had other plans. He should get married to the daughter of a baker, great Beis Halevi. And he said, "Rabbeinu Shloilam, you won." So this is the way it usually is, Rabbi Sai. Rabbi Shalom, he usually wins. So let's take a look, Rabbi, a little bit here, the Beis Halevi. Here. So the Beis Halevi here, the first item here on top, it brings down the Gemara in Kedushin, right away on top here. It's a Mishnah in Kedushin. The Mishnah says that Loy Anius Min Umnis. He says, the person finds himself in poverty, it's not because of his profession, nor if he is rich, it's from his profession. The profession just happens to be a means or a vehicle, but it's not the profession. The Beis Halevi goes on to say the following. He says, this will allow us to understand the mistake that people make, grand mistake, people who are mishtadl, people who are actively involved in pursuing parnosa, but they don't go straight. They veer off course and they do illegal things, he says. She'enu hoylech al derech ha-toyre, he says, v'nidnud gezel v'oinoa v'shar dvorem ha-surim. We find that people to be mishtadl in the course of their parnosa, we find that they are doing things which are wrong, which are keneged ha-toyre, which are violating the isurim of stealing, robbing, and so on and so forth. Ashal ze omra akosav, the posuk says, Beitzei tzifoni bako, is the pasuk we pointed out before. If someone had an egg, but he didn't recognize actually the nature of the egg, he thought it was an egg of a hen, he waited for it to hatch. It happened to be an egg of a reptile of an ochosh. When the egg hatched, what he did was he protected that egg and he brought it in order to have it incubated and so on and so forth to see to it that the egg finally hatches. Turns out that the egg that he hatched gave birth to an ochosh, to a snake, which in fact later on bit him and of course did him a lot of damage. So he was a person who thought that his ishtadlus is going to bring him good, and it turned out just the opposite. All of his ishtadlus, all things that he tried to do, turned out just the opposite. You'll ask this person, you'll ask him, why are you doing such unruly things? Why are you doing such unethical things? You'll ask him, Gam hu yoide, he will admit on the one hand, he may admit that he's not doing the right thing, but his answer is, I have no choice. I can't find a straight panose. His answer more often than not will be, he's forced to do what he's doing. He's being forced to this situation, the kovid apranosa, because the difficulty in his pranosa. Ube'emes, says the Beis Halevi, though, tshuve genuvehi. Sagigam v'teshuva, he says. Kirak, it's just the opposite. Kirak machma she'oisig b'yonam, it's just the opposite. It's because he is unethical. Glal kein, in his situation, ein l'parnos acheres. V'im lo yo'oisig b'zeh, if he would not do the unethical things, v'yimazim lo yo'oisig kisher, because Baruch would find him also parnos kisher. He chose to go on this route. The truth is, it's not the lack of a parnosa that causes a person to be unethical, like gezel, v'oinua, cheating, and so on. It's the opposite. The fact that you're unethical, that is what's goyrim, that you should not find your parnosa. To find it in such a lowly fashion. It starts by being unethical. The more that you add to purify your maisim, and add bitachon and trust in Hashem, the more that you add trust in Hashem and to purify your ma'isin, came to mayit memeno hayegiyeh basogas rosov, you will find it will diminish, he says, the extreme effort in order to find your panosis is ba'oifim kosher v'yosher. Well, Besalevi continues on and he tells us, v'zoyis toiras hodam hayosher, this is really the way, the hanhoge, the conduct of a person who is straightforward. How does a person act? A person who's an Adam Yosher, how should he deal with tragedy? How should he deal with problems? How should he deal with misfortune? How should he deal with pain? You know how you deal with it? When a person finds that misfortune has befallen him, he says, how do you deal with it? It could be either Ezitzar Cholila or Yechasor Mezoinis, or maybe he says lack of Panosa. Lo Yarbe Bishtadlusoi. The answer is not to overexert yourself with extra Shtadlus. Rakifash Pish Bemasov. The Eitzah is to do Chuvet. Search out your Maisim, Ashuloi Toivim, which are not okay. Shesimavuloi Kolze, which they were the cause that are bringing this about. Kamamorim, as the Gemara says in Brochus. The Gemara says, Imroya Odam Shiyasurim Boyin Olof. The Gemara tells us quite simply, if a person finds himself that Yisurim pain is befalling him, Yefash Pesh B'masov, he should search out his Maisim, what am I doing wrong in my life? The Yoshev Maisov Aroi, I let him do Tshuva from his bad Maisim, the Yishpoich Sicho Elifna Kodesh Baruch Hu, and cry out to Hashem, Sheyechalso Elamerchov, that he should remove him from his narrowness, and give him Harchove, give him prosperity. Kemaimar Akosa, the Pesuk says in Tehillim, Tefila lo oni kiyatoif, an oni is supposed to daven the Kodesh Baruch Hu, he wraps himself, lifnei Hashem yishpoch sicho, and he pours out his siach, his speech, his words, the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That is what the oni is supposed to be doing. Ukemamoram, as we find similarly, Chazal already said, Bemesech Tisnide, Ma yase odam yisasher, the Gemara asked the question, what should a person do, what's his gula for Ashiris? Ask a person, what's the school of Ashiris? Mayas Odam Yisasher. What should a person do and become rich? Yispalel Misha Oisha Shaloi? In other words, of course, you do your shtadlus, but at the same time, be mispalel to whom the Oisher Vanachosim Shaloi. Be mispalel to Kashbrocha to whom all possessions belong, and be chazek liboy be pitchoinoi, and at the same time also have bitochen, ubetikvosa and your hope boy in a Kashbrocha Yisbarech. The yikva believoi, establish in your heart, I should be lodo yizbarach eloi memi levakish ezra. The nikud is, and this is something which is reiterated in the house of Brisk, starting from Chaim Veloshin. The yisoid of betochen, the yisoid of atzlocha is in any area. A person has to be saved from tzoras and pain, from being attacked, from enemies and so on. A person has to come to the realization and acknowledge that the only one that can help him is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. When a person believes that he has his own power, it's within his own power to control his destiny, then Hashem says, okay, go ahead and do it. In order for our Kodesh Baruch Hu to do what he hopes to be helped and to gain, the Ezer, to gain the Yeshua HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to be totally dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Beis Halevi says again, that a person should be koivei ha-belev, ashu bilodo yizbarach ein loy mimi levakish ezra. And that's what we have in the Chavis Lovos also. Do not trust in two people, in Hashem as well as in somebody else. Because once you trust already in two, he says, then you don't have full trust anymore. And he says, what it means is that neither of them really is one that is totally trustworthy, because maybe this one can rely on that one will rely on that one. That's just one of the chesroinus, he says, of relying on others. You trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone and solely, because of all the milus, of course, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, as he pointed out, he's the Kol Yochel, he's the only one who really knows what's good for you, he's the only one who's able to help you, he's the only one who no one can stand in his way, and so on and so forth. So not a Kodesh Baruch Hu Bishutis with somebody else. It should be only be in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he goes out to point out that Kvar Mevuyeh B'Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, and it's already brought down in the Sefer of Chaim Volozhiner, writes in the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, Ashim Roya Odomes Atzlamoy Bitzar Cholila, that if a person finds himself in a matzav of pain, Yizboinen, what is the Eitzah? He should contemplate about Avdus Hashem, that only Hashem can help me. A person should reinforce that hashkof in his mind. Yizboinen be'achdus ha'boire, in the uniqueness of Hashem, asher einoid milvadoi. This is the key words, einoid milvadoi. You have to review that 100 times. Einoid milvadoi, einoid milvadoi. The more a person reinforces the einoid milvadoi, he'll find miracles happening in his life. He find suddenly, unexplainably, you'll find that Yeshuas are coming from all over. Was memele yistalku memenu kol hadinim v'hakatruigim. And then memele, he says, by believing and by clearly reinforcing this in one's life, that Einoid Mulvada, there's no other source that can help me, you'll find that automatically that all of the dinim and all the non-katrugim, that all the problems and the tzaras fall by the wayside. And the Posik says in Yeshaya, Ani Osisi, Vani Eso, Vani Ezbol Vamalek. The Brocha says, I am the one who makes things, I am the one who is soivel, and I am the one who allows you to escape from anything, in fact, that happens. So, we go to the third item. And the Baisalevi goes on further. So come someone and say to himself, you know what, okay, I'm going to start practicing Bitochen. How am I going to start practicing Bitochen? I'm going to cut down my work hours. But you know what? But in his heart, he really is very, very worried what's going to happen. So Baisalevi, that's not called Bitochen. Bitochen is not enough, he says, that a person be a dime. With his actions, he might try to act as if I'm living in the world of Bitochen, but his heart is not together with his hands. He said, the avoid of Bitochen is that the lev should firmly believe it. It points out here, umigeder habiteach hameule, the appropriate, the real appropriate biteach of trusting in Hashem means sheyilo habitochen loyrak biyodayim bemiut hamalochem. So I love that a person says, okay, I'm going to work less. In his heart, he has all kinds of requests. In his heart, he has all kinds of bekoshes. He wants and he wants and he wants and he wants. His betochen is holy. He's going to work less. Be a dime. Because there ain't a beteir belev. That is not called a beteir belev. The ikra betochen toli belev. The true quality betochen is where your heart is at. Kimamra Kosa, the Pesuk says in Tehillim, Boy botach libi. That also his heart and his rotzen, that he should feel very, very tranquil, should feel comfortable, should feel at ease, his heart should feel at ease. He shouldn't have all types of requests, meaning his trust should be in Hashem, that Hashem will grant him and give him that which he needs. The kol kach is chazik bebitchoinoi shebevade yaseloi kol ma shenisra letoivosoi. He should be so strong in his betochen that Hashem will surely do what's good for him, that he will be mevatel, that he will banish his own wants to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's. That is the highest level of betochen. As we find in Tehillim. In Tehillim it says, "Im loy shavisi v'doimamti." David HaMelech says that if I don't keep silent, he says, he swears, David HaMelech, she says, that I will keep silent, meaning to say, I will have so much trust in Hashem without complaining. He says, my soul, my nefesh, kigomul ale imoy. What does it mean? Like a child, a suckling child from his mother. Gomul means is when biyom hi gomail. Gomul means when he's being weaned off. When a child has been nursing for a number of years, so all he knows is there's one way to be fed. All of a sudden the mother weans him off and now she tries to give him actual food. Now he himself does not know that there's something other than nursing. And yet he's not going to be nursing anymore. So what is his trust? His trust is that his mother is going to give him what the mother is going to give him. He has no want, he doesn't know what to want because he has never tasted any other food. So he has trust in his mother will give him what he needs. So nefesh is kaloshin aposik. The word nefesh is not only neshama. Nefesh is rotzen. Im yeshes nafshechem, it says, by Ephraim. Which means rotzen. It means my rotzen should be, he says, v'omar, shehidmim v'hishtik, that he quieted, Dovra Melech quieted and he silenced, kol ritzai noisov, kigomul hazeh, like this suckling child, hasomach alimo, he's relying on his mother. What is the nature of a child that is relying on his mother? A child who is being weaned off his mother's nursing, he doesn't have rotzen gam lachila. He never had yet this opportunity to do any other eating.
So this is the idea of bitochen. Bitochen is not only biyadayim, bitochen has to be beikar biker belev. That is the nekuda of bitochen. So Rabbi Sai, so let's go to the Chovis Lavovos and see now the Chovis Lavovos continues now to complement what we have here from the Beis Halevi. The basic, as we say, it starts all, the Chovis Lavovos basically mentions it in his own words. Let's take a look here where we are. It's in the Chovis Lavovos in the Sfarim, it should be Daf Reish Chof, I believe. Daf Reish Chof. Take a look at it. V'hagdoma ha-revius. Up towards the bottom. Reish Chof towards the bottom, I believe. V'hagdoma ha-revius. Chovis Lavovos is pointing out the various conditions that a person needs to be considered a Bal Bitochen Bishleimus, to be a Bal Bitochen, which is Bishleimus, a perfect or close to perfect Bal Bitochen, the conditions that you need. And here he goes on to, he says, Vahagdoma Horevius, he says, and the first, he says, condition, the first, fourth condition, Shetia Hashgechosoi Chazoke, a person should be very careful, Vishtatlusa Gedoyla, and should be very involved, Likayim Mashichaivoi Boy Haboyre Mavoidosoi. Chovis Lavovos is of the opinion that the Bal Bitochen, in order that the things that he needs and hopes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfills and grants him, well, you know, it's a trade-off. You want Hashem to provide all the things that you hope and you expect, he says, then you also have to do the bidding of Hashem also. You have to try to follow in the mitzvahs of Hashem. And of course, we slip here and there, but we should try at least to set as a goal to try to follow and do the mitzvahs of Hashem. You want Hashem to do your bidding, it's more than right that you first try to do Hashem's bidding. So a person has to, as he says, should be mishtadl strongly, should be mishtadl strongly, should attempt strongly to be mekayim lekayim ashechayvoi boy haboyre mavedosoi. That which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was a mechayiv, obligated him in his service. The last is mitzvoisov, to do the mitzvahs, ulehizoyer, and to be careful to abstain ma'asher his hero memenu, to abstain that which you're not supposed to be doing. Kifi mashu mevakesh sheyihye haboyre maskim loy. Look, you want very strongly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should agree with what you want, with what you need. Don't you think that you should also reciprocate and do a little bit or a lot, of course, of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do? You are expecting and you are trusting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu the things that you're supposed to be trusting, trusting that Hashem will be mikayim that which you are trusting in Him. Well, at the same time, then maybe you should also be doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. We find that Chazal have mentioned the Mishnayos and the Masechtos Avos. So what do they say? They have said, see that your will should be, right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will should be your will. Many times we find ourselves at odds. My will doesn't exactly stem with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants one thing from me, I'd rather do something else. Says the Mishnah Novice, your avoida on this world is to try to make your wants secondary. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, that should in fact become your want. Asei ritzoinoi kiritzoincho. Make HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rotzen, that should be your rotzen. Now, you should want what Hashem wants. And what do you gain by that? Then your want, what you will it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will become His will. If you want your will to become Hashem's will, then Hashem's will should become your will. What Hashem wants, the mitzvah that Hashem was mitzaviyu, which means batel ritzoincho mipne ritzoinoi. Bimevatel, banish your own rotzen, what you'd rather be doing, on account of the Rotzen Hashem, Kedei Sheyevatel Rotzen Acherim Mipnei Ritzoincho. The Kodesh Baruch Hu also should be mevatel what others wanted to do to you, what others maybe wanted to contemplate to do against you. Hashem will destroy their plans for what is good for you and what you want, because you also were mevatel your Rotzen. You banished your wants for the sake of Hashem. V'omer HaKosov, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, B'tach B'Hashem V'asei Toiv. Trust in Hashem, but it says V'asei Toiv, but do the right thing also. Trust in Hashem. Trust in Hashem that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide everything that you need, but vasei toif, but do the right thing at the same time. Shechon Eretz, says David HaMelech in Tehillim. Dwell in the land, Shechon Eretz, when you dwell in the land, Ure'ei Emunah, nourish yourself with faith. Re'ei means to nourish yourself, like pasturing. Re'ei says Emunah, nourish yourself with what? With Emunah. Person should continuously nourish himself with Emunah.
And the Omar on the Pesach says further in Echo, Toiv Hashem Lekoivov, Kodesh Baruch Hu is good to those who trust in Him, Lenefesh Tidrishenu, to the soul who seeks Him. So Kaponim, so this is, the Chovetz Chavos is telling us, that one of the very important Nekudis is, that in order that one's Bitochen should really be successful, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu should really fulfill the wishes of the particular person and so on and so forth, that a person is mevatel zon ritzayin, see to it as much as possible to try to mekayem a Kodesh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs. Avol mi, take a look how foolish it's going to look, says the Chovetz Chavos, and he elaborates here. But imagine what it's going to look like. Avol mi she yiftach al aboyre. But imagine someone who's going to trust in Hashem, that Hashem is going to provide everything that he needs. Vehu mamrei oisa, and yet he defies Hashem. So you want to trust in Hashem, that Hashem should do good for you. But at the same time, you're mamrei oisa, but you're defying Hashem. Kama hu sochol, he says. How foolish is this person? Vekama datoi chalushoi v'hakorosoi. And look how weak his mind is and his intellect is. If someone expects Hashem to do everything his bidding, to do his bidding, and yet you're not giving anything back in return. Ki hu raye. Any common person, just take a look at a human society. Just take a look in human society. For example, kimishin ismano loy mibnei yodam al dover. Imagine if someone is being charged in human society to do something. You're appointing someone to do something. So someone was being charged to do something. Kishu mitzavoy, so let's say he's being commanded, that person, you're charging someone, so you're commanding him, lisasek b'tzoyrech mitzrocha. You're commanding him to do something that you need to be done. Or let's say, oimazroy semidover. Or maybe you're warning him about something. The yavar al mitzvoy. So at the same time, the person that you are charging, but you yourself are defying that person in other areas. You're defying that person. The agia, and the person who is being charged finds out about it, that you are doing everything against him, that you are rebelling against him, you are defying him. He says, when the person being charged hears that he's supposed to try to do things on your behalf, and he hears that you are defying him, that'll be the strongest sibah, that'll be the most strongest reason of all reasons for him not to do it. If there's any reason for him not to do it, that will be the strongest reason for not wanting him to do it for you. Why should he do it for you if you're doing, living your life, defying him, rebelling against him? Ki yihye hasibah hachazok, he says, that will be the strongest reason. Lehimona mimenu, he says, hayosis machibota cholaboy, from doing that which you trust in him. So if this is true in human society also, why would somebody want to do something for you if you're rebelling against him, you're defying him? So if that's true even between two people, koshken certainly misha over al chukei lekimim mitzvoisa. Someone who is over on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he says, dictates and his mitzvahs, ashe yoa deheid aleim, which of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised schar, the schar, and there's oynish, the schar for being mekayim, there's oynish for not being mekayim. So if you conduct yourself in that way, shetia toicheles, he says, your hopes, habiteichol of nechzovet, will be dashed. Your hopes will be dashed. Kishi yamreyu, he says, when you rebel or you defy against Hashem. V'loyeh royu, you don't really deserve, lehikori b'shem b'teich balikim. You don't deserve to be called a b'teich balikim in that way. Achu kemoy shomer akosuf. But rather, the proper anhoge is, as we see, as a matter of fact, the Pesach tells us. The Pesach says as follows in Iyuv. It says, Kimatikvas, it says, Chonav ki yivtso. The Pesach says, the Chonav is the hypocrite. The hypocrite, he says, what is the hope for the hypocrite? Right? In other words, he thinks and he looks that sometimes he gains a profit. So the Pesach says, Kima tikvas chonav ki yivtso. What is really the hope of the hypocrite? Ki yivtso. Ki yivtso means when he gains a profit. What is really his hope? He thinks for a moment that he got away with it. He doesn't get away with it. Ki Pesach says, Ki yashel elokam nafshoi. Because the truth is, Kodesh Baruch Hu will surely cast away his nefesh. In other words, Kodesh Baruch Hu will find him, and Kodesh Baruch Hu will take care when the time comes. Hatakosa Yishma Keil. You expect that the Kodesh Baruch Hu will listen to his cry, that is when misfortune befalls him. You expect the Kodesh Baruch Hu will listen. But Omer the Pesach says further. Pesach says in Yirmiyah. Pesach says, Hagonoiv Rotseach Venoiv. Imagine a person who does any of these things. He's a ganav, he's a murderer. Venoiv is an adulterer. Yishova Lesheker, he swears falsely. The Omar, after doing all of these things or any of these things, He comes along and he says, says the Novi, Ubosem v'amaretem lefonai b'bayis hazeh, then you come to the Beis HaMikdosh, asher nikra shmi Olov. So, the Ganav, the Ritzeach, after this is what he does in his private life, then he comes to the Beis HaMikdosh and he expects HaKadosh Baruch Hu to fulfill and do his bidding. This is what Yirmiyah says. Do you expect that to happen? Do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu will accept whatever you come? After doing all these things, your Ganav, your Ritzeach, and doing all of these toyevos, do you expect that when you come to the Beis HaMikdosh, the Beis HaMikdosh is going to stand there ready to serve you? The Omar, the Posik says, Yirmiyah says further. Yirmiyah says, Hame'oras, he says, Perotzim hoyabai, says that. Do you think it's a cave, a safe haven? He says, for people who are trying to run away from the bad that they did. They're going to run to the Beis HaMikdosh. The Beis HaMikdosh will take them in and protect them. He said, do you think this is a mar, this is a cave for the Perotzim? Do you think this is a cave for all of those, he said, that have breached? Habai says that, Senikr Shemiolov, it's not going to happen. So Melus of Chavis Avovitz tells us that it works, it's like one hand washes the other. You do for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for you. Da'agdoma chamishis, she's boy retzle. And finally, we do this one here. He says, da'agdoma chamishis, says, the fifth tenai is, ke'ashlomas hadvorim. He says, the truth is, the person has to make it clear to himself. The person has to make it clear. Ke'ashlomas hadvorim ha'mischachim bo'el mazeh. When you see things taking care of themselves in this world, there's always new things coming about, new things evolving. La'acha yisira. Because God created the world many, many years ago. But since then, there are new things always evolving. But you have to understand, regarding all of the new things that evolve in this world after creation, you have to confirm in your mind shnei dvarim. There are two things. Echol mehem, number one, you have to recognize that gezeirois habayre yisale vechefzoi biyitziyosom el gvul hahavaya. That these things, these new things that have evolved, are not things that happen by themselves, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Geizer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ordained and wanted these things to happen, and he decided when to happen. Some things might happen 3,000 years later. May happen 4,000 years, 5,000 years later. But whatever happened after creation didn't just happen, didn't just evolve. This is all part of Hashem's rots in the time He created the world, that all these things should happen and when they should happen. Vasheni, as He points out, because Baruch Hu, A, He ordains them to happen. The second thing is, some things happen earlier, some things happen later. Some causes are, you see the results immediate, some causes you don't see it. Vasheni says, Sibois, he says, Umetsuim. He said, what we find is intermediate causes. We find intermediate causes. Mehem kroivim, mehem rechoivim. Some are immediate, and he says some are further away. He said, which bring results. Umehem niglim, some of them we can see openly. Umehem nistarim. Now, sometimes we can see Hashem's hand. Sometimes you don't see. More often than not, you don't see Hashem's hand in it. Unless you really look hard to be able to recognize the Yad Hashem. As the Tzadik HaKohen once pointed out, we say in the davening, Molo ha'oretz kinyonecho. The entire world is filled to be koine you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu concealed himself because there has to be free choice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu concealed his presence in the world. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves clues. It's like playing a game, you have to pick up clues. HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves clues in the world of his presence. The truth is, the entire world is filled with ability to be koine Hashem. But you have to find him. The entire world is filled with the possibility to be koine HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Some are nigle, some are nister. The kulam, but the bottom line is that the kulam, everything in this world, rotsim lahashkom, everything is rushing to complete. Mashin nigzer have Yosef HaKadosh Baruch Hu ordained to happen. Vare Yosef HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictates the ezer lekim lohem alzad that these things should happen. So this is the bottom line, and this is the Yisoy Rabbi Yisai of Betochem. We have another just a few minutes. Let me just mention again. Talking about again Shara Bitochen, talking about insignificant acts, we talk about significant acts, we talk about cause and effect. Things, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Geizer is going to happen one way or another. The things that cause them to happen, these are not important. HaKadosh Baruch Hu already finds ways that things should happen. But Lamaiz HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants things to happen, they're going to happen. Point out that one of the great Gedol Yisrael, this is the Chodesh of Teves, and the Chodesh Teves was the Petir, one of the Gedol Yisrael, who lived 300 years ago, and named by Rav Naftali Katz. Rav Naftali Katz was the Baal Smichas Chachomen. The Naftali Katz is mentioned in the Tshuvas of the Chacham Tzvi, who was the father of Rabbi Yankev Emden. He's mentioned there, but he was a great Baal Mekubal as well, Benigalu Benister. And Rav Naftali Katz, he was among the many areas that he was had rabbinical position. He was offered in 1704, was appointed as a rabbi of Frankfurt.
in Germany. And as mentioned, he was the Mechaber de Sefer Smichas Chachomim, which is a pirish on the Gemara. And it tells us godless, you can see clearly over there too, you see Beniglu, Benister, and all the areas of Torah. Tremendous Balmoisvis, a great Balmakubal, and so on and so forth. Truly one of the highly, highly respected Gedolim of his time, by his peers these days. The interesting thing is that what happened was with him, there's no time to go into a lot of things, but just to mention what we want to get to here, that during his tenure, as we said, Frankfurt was considered to be one of the most foremost kehillas, one of the foremost kehillas in the Jewish world of that day. In the 1700s, probably the most respected or distinguished rabbinical or Jewish community was in Frankfurt at that time. It is on January 14th, it was in 1711, which works out to be Chov Dalet Teves. On Chov Dalet Teves in 1711, it was something about 9 o'clock in the evening, a fire breaks out in the house of Naftali Katz. Within minutes, the flames, they spread all over to the neighboring. If you ever saw a picture of Frankfurt, you could see it in the 18th century, because the Jewish ghetto houses were built next to each other, literally side by side. They were all attached on this side of the street and the other side of the street. And being that you could not extend, the ghetto was only as big as it was, houses had to be built another story. So you had very tall buildings, because you could not, the ghetto was what it was. So you couldn't make it wider, you couldn't make it longer. But if you needed more rooming, more housing, so they went up higher and higher. And being that the house was so close together, whenever there was a fire, you can be sure that it was tremendously, terribly dangerous, because fire would spread easily from one house to the other. In Kachav, fire was leaping from one rooftop to the other rooftop, and before long, the entire ghetto, it was turned into a blazing inferno, and engulfing homes and the shuls, wooden structures, many of them. And they burned like tinderboxes. By the way, there is a sefer called Rabboni Frankfurt, written by Rabbi Marcus Horowitz. He was at the time of Shlomo von Hirsch. He was the other rov of the community, because you know that Frankfurt has seceded from the general community, separating the Orthodox community from the Reform community, which many, many years were worked upon for the government to recognize that. Rav Hirsch worked on that many, many years, and finally, which was recognized. So the Reform community saw that the Jewish, that at least there's a new Kehillah forming, so they allowed within their auspices to have an Orthodox shul be built, giving them autonomy, but nevertheless all the taxes and all the dues were paid to the general Reform community. It was a big machlokes and halacha, whether Orthodox community has to separate totally, or they can be under the umbrella of one large community, except you have autonomy, you have your own shul, you have your own shochtim, and so on and so forth. You have freedom to practice your religion your way, but you're still under the same umbrella. Anyway, so Rabbi Mordechai Levi Horowitz, Odom Godel himself, he was a son-in-law, by the way, of the Oruch Lener, none other than the Oruch Lener. It was really a rival Rav, you can call it, of Rav Hirsch, because the Hirschian community were very much opposed to the fact that he breached that Hashkofim. But he did not go along with that Hashkofim. And there were other Gedolim who didn't go along with that Hashkofim either. Rebitzchik Dov Bamberger, the Würzburger Rav, was a Godel Dor of the time. One of the most, you can call it, tragic machloikis. You could maybe use that word. At that time, you're talking about the mid-1800s, between two Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Hirsch himself used to ask Shilas all the time of the Würzburger Rav, of Rabbi Bamberger, and this would cause a tremendous rift. Because why? Because certain Talmid Chachomim did not want to separate, asked the Shiloh from Rabbi Bamberger if they have a chiv to separate. For some reason, even though he was not Rav of the Kehillah, why he got involved with it. Usually Rabbonim do not get involved in situations out of their community where there is a Rav already there. And he passed and says, you don't have to. Rav Hirsch was very, very upset. He figured that his life's work is sort of being self-defeated by such an Odom Godel. And essays went back and forth, pasking mutter, osser, mutter, and it became a public situation in journals, pro and con, and so on and so forth. So that's it's a piece of history which can be studied for a long, long time in its own right. Then in any case, so in Rabboni Frankfurt, Rabbi Horowitz went and he wrote, he said that the newspapers of the time wrote, sort of like mocking, he says, Rav Naftali Katz saying that he's supposed to be a mystical person. So he said he probably wanted to summon the Sar Hamayim. He made a toast. He said, Hashem, the Sar Eish. And if all the fire came out and broke out. And he said, he made a mistake. He says, he wanted to summon the Sar Hamayim. Meantime, was the Sar Eish. Turns out that the ghetto burned down. You have to realize that 500 homes were destroyed at the time. 500 homes. 8,000 people were made homeless. 36 Sifrei Torah were burnt. And they say many Sfarim, in addition to the value of about 100,000, the money at the time, Sfarim write Reish Tes, Rosh HaTevis. What's Reish Tes? Reichstaler. Reichstaler. So, a tremendous amount of money, the value of Sfarim. It's called Chachmi Soil, which brings it down. But anyway, so the fact of the matter is, he was imprisoned by the authorities, he was freed. At the end of the day, because of the tsarists that surrounded this incident, he went to Prague, but then he was oiled to Eretz Yisrael. He never made it to Eretz Yisrael. What happens is he dies in Turkey, in Istanbul. To this day, it's a mokim, a kever that people, many, many people from all over go for Yeshua to be mispalled at the kever of Naftali Katz. And so forth. What am I mentioning this? I'm mentioning this because there is a person, his name is Dr. Mordechai Eliash. Dr. Mordechai Eliash, who was the Israeli ambassador to Great Britain, and he says that he had an aunt. He had an aunt, his name was Dina Eliash. He said, is buried, he says. This Mordechai Eliash said that his aunt is buried, he says, in that cemetery. it's Constantinople, which it was called. And he says that while he was there on a visit, he says, to Istanbul, he was there on a visit, he says, Dr. Eliash said he was told the following story, he said, by the secretary of the Kehila in Istanbul. Okay, Dr. Eliash is going to visit the kever of his aunt. And the secretary tells him the following story. He says that while in the throes of death, Mrs. Eliash calls the office of the Kehila and she requests that the secretary come to her bedside. And she says the following words. She says, I'm about to die and I'm asking you to promise me that you bury me alongside the grave of my Zayde, Rav Naftali Katz. Naftali Katz, God Lador, is buried in Istanbul. She's telling the secretary she wants to extract the promise. So she's going to be dying. And she wants a promise that she'll be buried next to her ancestor, after Naftali Katz. Secretary, by the way, till then never heard of her. Never heard of her before in his life. And he finds her that was reclining in her bed, he says, in a hotel room. She repeated, apparently she had come, that she wasn't living there before, but she had come there. And he says, finds her, and she repeats the request that she wants to be buried after next to her grandfather. So he says, how can I be sure, he says, that you're in fact a descendant, he says, of this great tzaddik? How do I know? You're telling me this? How do I know? And his name was Siegel. He says, besides, I'm only human. And he says, and another thing he says, the cemetery has not been in use for hundreds of years. The cemetery has not been used for hundreds of years, and it's completely full. How do you expect me to find a vacant plot? He says to her. She explains to him her lineage, her whole yichus up to there, reaching back to Naftali Katz. And she says further, by this time tomorrow, she says, I won't be here anymore. And she looks him straight in the eye. Please take care of the matter and let me know tonight, he said, what you've accomplished. Tomorrow, he says, I'm not going to be here, she says. He never heard such a request. This was an awesome situation. So this Mr. Siegel goes and he submits the request. The name of the Rav at the time was Rabbi Marcus of Istanbul. An interesting thing, the Rav, he says to her, you know, there's something called mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes. Normally a person requests something such as a wacky request. But he says, mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes, you can't refuse the last wishes, says, of a person, a dying person. And he says, I'll see what I can do. Towards the evening, he goes back to see Mrs. Eliash. And she again asks for, and she receives his promise about the burial site. She also had another request. She requested that she should not be transported to the cemetery, he says, in a car or in a hearse, which is shared by all the religions in Istanbul, but her aron to be carried on the shoulders of the members of the Chevra Kedisha. She wants that also. To be carried. And she asks Mr. Siegel at the time, while he is there, to recite with her the entire Tefillah of Ne'ilah, that you say on Yom Kippur, as well as the Vidui, and also the Atonoisin Yad, which is also from the, you know, from the Tefillah, of course, of Nila. And Mr. Siegel says, you know, when he relates, he says, this incident, he said he was mamish moved to tears, because even though it happened more than 23 years before, he was telling the story. He was telling the story to Dr. Mordechai Eliash. Let's remember that.
Following day, guess what? Mrs. Elias, she passes away. Mrs. Elia passed away. So after getting to know her, just little experience, just in a few hours, he saw the pureness of her heart, her pure spirit and so on, her uprightness. He arranges for the Chevra Kedisha to carry her on the shoulder, to carry all her wishes. And he ordered also that the women took care of the Tahara, that each woman, that they should toivel themselves in a mikveh before touching her remains. And Mamish to treat her body with utmost respect. Something unusual, a burial of a tzaddik Mamish, she received. Meanwhile, Mr. Siegel goes to the old cemetery, and he says, miraculously, he says, a grave site had appeared out of nowhere alongside the grave of Ramatoli Katz. And Mr. Siegel says to Dr. Mordechai, who was the nephew, I could not believe my eyes, he said. I visited the grave of this tzaddik many times before. I never noticed the empty plot. Never noticed the empty plot, he says. We began to dig, and strangely, says, the earth felt soft and smooth as though it had been prepared for the descendant of the tzaddik, he says. People carried her on their shoulders to her final resting place for the entire distance, several kilometers. He says, and Rabbi Marcus, the Rav there, gave a little hesped in which he said that words failed to describe this nifledige, hafledige event. Since that day, Lamaisa, Jews of Istanbul and many visitors have come to pray at her grave as well. Half of the fellow, I say. See how you got to protest again. Good.